Hello, and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon, recording from downtown Nicosia. And with me in my virtual studio, I have Adelina Teshani, who's coming to us from Pristina. Welcome, Adelina.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for this space.
Adelina and I met in October, where we both attended in different capacities the 10th OSCE Dialogue Academy for Young Women in Slovenia, which brings together young women from Pristina and Belgrade. And it's an incredible workshop that teaches intercultural dialogue, mediation, conflict resolution, and learning ourselves and our enemy better. So to me, it's one of the best experiences I've had. It's one of the, I think it's the second or the third time I've gone, and I loved it because every time I learn something. Adelina is a multidimensional art activist who works across poetry, journalism, visual storytelling, and exhibitions. An interesting combination, but a combination that I like because if we want to solve conflict wherever it is, creativity is actually an easier way to do it because it's something that appeals to everyone. You don't need special words. You don't need to understand the jargon. You need to understand it needs to appeal to you in a different way. So tell us about the way you approach fighting feminism, for feminism, patriarchy.
May I just say that I also loved your workshop in this academy where we met. It was one of my favorite, if not the only one favorite, because it had this gathering of all these women that are together, but like looking at it from a human side and mostly from a women's perspective. I think in these kind of gatherings, be that a workshop or a training or like even a conference, I think when you have all women participants specifically, and there is a reason why it's only all it's only women participants, it is important to connect the participants in and create that base of we are all women and how do we get it from here? How do we go up there or how do we work out the fact that this is what connects us? So I think workshop did that very well and I was so happy to be a part of it. And I had to go back in my childhood also, like the way you lead it. So I was just, yeah, I'm going to preach you on that because it was so... So amazing to be part of it.
And it's actually quite a simple workshop because to bring the listeners up to date, it's using beads to work through important parts of your life, whether they're negative or positive, but it's actually working through trauma without working through trauma. It's a much simpler, softer way of working through trauma. And you bring out, there's no judgment. Everyone has their story. We all remember things in the way we want to remember them. Our choice, and it's really easy. So I think I like it. Every time I do it, I love it more because it's simple. It's directed at everyone at every level.
I mean, there I was in the, as you said, in we were in different roles there. I was as the one of the co-facilitators, and I was together with participants before and after the workshop, and I could see the change on how they connected with each other, no matter where they came from. After the workshop, because I'm saying you created this safe space for them to get to know one another in a more deeper level and human level. And to go back to your question, I have this maybe very, very personal experience on how I proved to myself that art is the way to tackle and to bring it, if not make big changes, to bring it to public discussion, different issues, especially what I deal with, that is bringing to light the experiences of women that come from different backgrounds, and specifically women that are from rural areas where I come from myself, which had to push so much more and work so much harder to make it in the circle and not even the top, but in the circle of people that are trying to do something. Where did this change happen? I mean, I remember myself writing poetry since I was little, but it's not that I could name it. I always found that there is another way that I'm writing because I always needed the audience to be engaged. I wanted it to be direct. I was writing in slang Albanian without even trying to use these fancy words. So I was like, is this poetry? What I am doing, is it poetry? And what happened is that I was invited in 2017 from the collective Marshrooms Festoim, which is translated to "We March, We Don't Celebrate," because it is very common in this region where I live to celebrate the 8th of March, even though we don't have a reason to, but it's seen as the Mother's Day rather than as a Woman's Day. So they every year they do this traditional, I would say, march throughout Pristina. And this year they decided to also include something artistic in it. So not just speeches, not just slogans, but also something artistic. They invited me to write this poetry and perform it. And to be honest, in the very last day I wrote it, when I was part of the group, working groups, I heard them talking about unpaid labor work. And I was like, this is the place to be. They are talking about my mother's life, which I don't want to repeat, which I don't want to be in the future. And that was the moment that I was like, yeah, I need to contribute somehow. So I wrote this poetry that was called Patriarchal Logic, or Way of Thinking, or Mentality. And I performed it in the 8th of March. What happened with that poem is that people were not used to, first of all, slam poetry, because later I discovered that what I do is actually slam, not a classic way of writing poetry, but it's like spoken word and performing it. They were not used to it. They were not used to young women being so vocal. And to be honest, in that performance, I was also so angry to have to state the obvious, but I was also very naive, thinking that everybody already knows that. And yeah, this is just gonna go by. They're gonna hear it once and pass. But no, what happened with that poem was that it went viral on social media. It turned me into a meme, which nowadays is a way of communication for the younger generations, and then into a graffiti around Pristina. And I was like, okay, this can work. Like all the messages and the comments, be that hate comments or good messages that I would get from young women that I didn't even think of representing within that poem. So I was writing about my personal experience as a woman growing up in Kosovo, my mom's, my sisters, my friend, like everyone, all the women that I am surrounded with. And then I was like, oh my God, I can also represent people without even thinking so. And the fact that they feel represented and heard of, that was like the moment that I switched. Of course, I was too young in this whole idea of being visible about it, even though I had exercised, I would say, my activism before, but not this much publicly. So that was the entry point that for some months I did not receive it well. There was a lot of hate online that I got the
But
comments wouldn't stop. Yeah.
Adelina, you do know that when people come back with hate comments, it's usually a confirmation that you're doing the right thing,
I know, I know, I
that you've hit a nerve.
feel
If so, now if
it.
everyone's standing saying, "Oh, wonderful, great, and perfect," it means you haven't changed anything, you haven't shifted anything. But the minute you're getting, but I mean, it's not nice to get this hate speech or the lots of criticism, but stepping back, you've got to realize that that means some nerve has been hit somewhere. You
For
pinched a nerve
sure, for
somewhere,
sure.
so it's got people thinking, it's got their attention.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even before, but now 8 years later, I see it as exactly as like a proof that I was saying the right thing. Otherwise, why would a typical man be triggered from the fact that I say that your wife, who also works 8 hours outside of the house, should not be doing the house labor and the houseworks alone? You should also help her. And in this case, it's not even help. You are living together, so you should be able to support each other. So when I, but back then I was super young, and I was like, oh my God, I really, nobody, it's affirming this, what is happening? But lucky for me, I kept meeting the collective and the people, and this is what I say, like we should have a better connection. Another lesson learned from this for me was that we should have a better connection with older, I would say, activists, feminist activists who in one way or another have gone through this. Because, okay, maybe they did not become a meme, maybe they did not go viral on social media, but they faced this kind of backlash with whatever small things they did years ago. So the fact that I had this connection with these activists, they would tell me, look, if you go through this, it's going to make you so much stronger and you're never going to stop doing it. And they were right. I never stopped doing it. I kept writing so much more poetry and just performing it all over Europe, to be honest, to America for the women's rights in general, and specifically economical empowerment for them. So it was like a turning point for me, and it was a way of confirmation and of proving that yes, art can be a tool for activism, specifically feminist activism in Kosovo in this case.
But you touched on a really important point. There needs to be that intergenerational conversation. You need to be, there needs to be a conversation between your generation and my generation, not because we need to step away, but because we also, the older, and I'm speaking as the older generation, the narrative has changed and the way people say things has changed. But our experiences are still valid, but we need to learn to transmit them in a way that's effective or more contemporary. And
I
sometimes,
agree.
when you do it in a different way, even I sometimes understand things differently. I'll say something that I've been saying for, say, 10 years, and then you will come in with your slam poetry, say it in with your way, and I think, damn, I didn't think of it in that way. So these intergenerational conversations are very, very important, because if we actually want to make a difference and it's not looking good, we need to change the way we frame the narrative, or perform the narrative, or pass on the narrative.
Exactly. Exactly. I think it's missing in some links, to be honest, this connection between generations, just to learn from one another, just to give this safe space. Sometimes you need somebody in that moment after I was opening my phone. And trust me, we have a saying in Kosovo where we say, or maybe I think it could be even international, even the biggest miracle lasts only 3 days. And I was like, people are going to forget about this at some point. And on the third day, on the fourth day, I give my phone to my sister without opening it. And I'm like, could you please open it and tell me that there's no messages, no friend requests, no bad comments, no good comments? I just want to believe that people forgot about it. And she looked at the phone and she was like, how about you don't look at it at all? And that's what I understood, that it's also a way, like if you change the method, because it's not that I said there's something that is never heard of, but the way I
Exactly.
was saying it, it was like a different way of approaching the issue. So if I had maybe more heard more of the experience of other activists before, it would have prepared me better for this experience. But it passed, it passed. Now I go back to the comments. I mean, some of them stay with me. For example, I remember reading the comments those days, and it's still up there, to be honest. I did not take any measures. I'm still thinking about it, to be honest. It was one of the comments because we did the perform I did the performance in the square in front of a national theater in Pristina, and one of the comments said, if I was there, I would drag her from her hair around the square. And I'm like, oh my God, what if, I mean, you never know if they keep it just behind their screens or not, but I get curious, obviously, and I go to see his profile. And what I see, Magda,
What?
is that he is wearing a police uniform. And then I'm like, what if someone else does that? And I go to report the case and you are in charge. How will that case be handled? Will you wrap the papers and like never deal with it after I leave the police station? Like, that's what I understood, that, oh, this is taking many layers rather than just people being mad behind their screens. But yeah, I mean, I was hanging out with the collective even after that, with activists that have gone in some way or another through this, and like their support helped me, and my family's support helped me to keep doing what I'm doing. Even though my dad, he says, okay, just try not to be the person who opens the door, nor the one who closes it, because if you open it, obviously you're the first one to do things, so they're gonna be shouting at you, and if you close it, you're gonna get a kick on your butt, because this is how you get if you're the last one. And I was, first time he told me this, I was like, oh, he has a point. And my quickest answer to that was, well, that there's no space for everyone in the middle, in the comfort zone. So someone has to lead, someone has to be the last one. We have to find our places. But I had their support.
I would agree with you because it's what's wrong with opening the door? Someone's
Oh.
got to open the door. And if you
Yeah.
come second, you're not re I think someone's got to open the door. You can't always wait for someone else to do the in Greek there's an expression to bring the snake out of the hole. You can't wait for
Yeah.
someone else to open the door for you. You've
Yeah,
got to
that's
step
true. He just
forward and
did.
be bold.
Yeah, he just didn't want it to be me, so I don't face these threats. And like even in the middle of the street, when people would stop the car and shout at me for what I did, so I get his perspective, but I got
Yes,
his
he was
kindness
being he
also.
was a protective dad. He was being a
Yeah.
protective dad. But Adelina, you went recently to a festival in Brussels. Did you
Yeah, it
not?
was in Leuven, actually.
Okay. Tell me
Yeah.
about it because you told me a little bit and it sounds quite exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very cool festival. If I'm not mistaken, it's the second edition. It's called Restart. Restart also included a Restart Festival on restorative justice, done from by the European Forum for Restorative Justice. And I was there because I was invited to show my piece. That's what makes me also a multi-disciplinary artist. I have created this exhibition with a narrative exhibition with stories of 12 people who come from countries that are in conflict, post-conflict, or in wars, and who have a chance to live together for 2 years in Italy because of a program called World House Program done in Rondine, in the Tuscany region in Italy. So there, what I tried to do was how I got the idea. I figured that I knew that we have derogatory terms for people who think did us wrong. Like in this case, I knew we had a derogatory terms for people that come from Serbia because of our history together. And then I was questioning. Does and I know that they have for us. And then I was like living with these people, with these young, amazing people. And I'm like, I need to figure out if everyone has this derogatory term for the other side, let's say, of the history. And I went around and I was asking them, and yeah, all of them have one term that they use to describe the other side of the history. And then I was like, okay, we have to work on this, and we have to see. I need to ask them and have these small, very casual interviews where they tell me if they had changed their perception of the other side because they meet for the first time and because they live together with what they are used to call enemy. And then I figured out that yes, there's 12 people. For example, I have there people from Russia, Ukraine, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Mali, Bosnia, Kosovo, Serbia. What else? It's 12 of them that have shared their stories of how they thought of their enemy before having the chance to meet it. Mind you, in some contexts, we have the chance as young people to meet the other side because of different programs that are organized mostly from civil societies. But for example, I had the young people from Armenia and Azerbaijan, and I didn't know that they never had a chance to meet before, and they would never have a chance to meet before and like see, if I may say, the human in their enemies. So to hear their stories and to be able to document them, it was so inspiring for me. So basically, the exhibition is that all of them in their foreheads have written the word that they call the other side, to basically play also with this idea to put yourself in their shoes and how they feel when you call them that. And they would tell the story of how they changed this idea because of having the chance to live together and eat together and cry together and party together for more than 2 years. So that was the story. The exhibition is called Trovarsi nella traduzione. So it's in Italian, but it has been translated now in so many languages because it also traveled. So the meaning is found in translation. It has also traveled in Pristina, Belgrade, Podgorica, now in Leuven, and I think it will be back also again in Rondine in Italy.
But yeah,
I'm having also other people wanting to see it.
Adelina, about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, with another colleague of mine, we did a really interesting project bringing together teenagers, 16, 18-year-olds, Greek Cypriot, Turkish Cypriot, Greek, and Turkish. And this thing of writing down of the words you've got for the other or the perceptions you've got of the other and what you think the other thinks of you. And this, it was the first 2 or 3 days are a challenge. This was a week because they're still feeling their way around. They need to find their safety, the safe balance. But by the end, they realize that there is a lot more. Firstly, their perceptions are usually totally off. Okay. And they also, what they think people think of them is also totally off. And it's which jumps, not recalibrating, reformatting your computer. You actually go to the beginning and you need to recalibrate to put things in place. And it's great to see, or no, it's terrible to see what the system and society does to people because it brainwashes them to believe that, in our case, Turks are barbarians, okay? Whatever that word means, or Greeks are stupid, or I mean, silly conceptions that firstly, you don't lump some people. I mean, not there are barbaric Turks. As they are barbaric Greeks, but there are some. It's, you can't put one quality to represent an entire nation or an entire group of people. So these cultural exchanges, where you actually, it's the same thing I think that happened to an extent at the Dialogue Academy in Slovenia, where you're actually sitting with your friend who's from Belgrade or your new friend who's from Belgrade and them having to say and listening to what they're saying. So to me, these contexts where you bring together enemies are so they the start is rocky and challenging, but I think as you go along and as the participants go along, you're not going to convert everyone, but you're certainly going to take people one step closer to being a bit more open, being slightly less judgmental, just stepping away from the what you call it, the stereotypes of what is a Greek. A Greek is someone who dances sitaiki and drinks ouzo and sings fun in the sun in the on a Greek island. So it's these are really good, and that's what I liked about what happened in Pristina in Slovenia as well. That these young all the young girls, there were shifts. Some were big, some were small, some were tearful, some were quite harsh. But it's nice to see when you create a safe space
Yeah,
that
that's
people
true.
can
That's true.
step in and say, "Oh, I didn't think of that," or "I had a different idea, so let me step away for a while and just listen and then come back." Okay,
Yeah,
so
exactly. But if I may, it's also very important to have this approach of, I don't know, taking into consideration every context and then the human being behind this. For me, the good part was that, first of all, I was myself part of the exhibition. I did share my story with, let's say, with encountering the other side, which gave them more safe space to be like, okay, she is sharing her story herself. So I feel like doing so. And the second one, it was more than on a voluntarily basis. Like I would have very random conversations with them and be like, this is what I plan to do. If you feel like you had this change of mind, be that also just over a coffee, of a morning coffee, then you can tell me your story. And the second thing, and the third thing, sorry, was that I lived with them. So they are all my friends now, and I have a bigger responsibility rather than some people that I just met randomly on a research, which is also a fine way, but for me, this ethical way of doing things, because I think we need to consider things also when we use art as a tool to tackle these very, very, very delicate issues. It is important that you take into consideration that each of them have their own story. I mean, I would go deeper to talking to them and be like, but why do you think like that? And they're like, well, they stormed into my family's house and I had to leave and I saw my house burning in front of my eyes. So all that trauma and still the courage to meet and live and talk with the other side and like all of this should be taken into consideration. And sometimes, if I may, also, I see this lack of ethics within different pieces of art that I see. Not everything is so contemporary and so cool and so fun to look at. Can we also like think of the human behind it, or we just take a piece and specifically from the people that go to another country or another territory, and they're like, oh, all of a sudden I got this idea and I want to do this without taking everything into consideration. No, you cannot produce things like that. I mean, you keep producing, but of course, then you're going to have a lot of backlash because you didn't become, I would say, one of them, or you have zero history of what they have gone through. This is like the patronizing way that I see also with women and with their stories. The minute they have hands on their story, they're just gonna go for the clickbait or sound interesting. And that for me is very disturbing. I try to do it in the most ethical way possible. And the good part was that we shared the same experience. I also lived with them 2 years. We talked every day about this. It was like a process of maybe a full on 1 year where I would go and slowly take pieces of it and then get their consent of what I think should go within it. Otherwise, I would never want that one of them goes like, no, that is not what I said, or this is not what I want to be represented with. So that for me is very important, rather than sending this big message of look at these coexistence, look at how things can change, because everyone has their own story and it can be very traumatic.
But I think you started the point that you started off with is the most important point is that for this space to be safe, I've got to make myself vulnerable. So I've got to tell my story. And when you listen to a story, you can usually tell if the story is authentic or not. And the way you tell your story is also what will pave the way for what you're going to do going forward, because if your story doesn't come across as authentic or you haven't really made yourself vulnerable, people are not going to trust you.
Exactly.
But if you actually open up yourself and you show your vulnerability and you also show your doubts and your insecurities, then it's a lot easier to take steps forward in understanding the other, because then the other will actually open up and say, oh, I had something similar, or someone else I know had the same thing, and this is what's happened to me. And to me, that's why, I mean, storytelling is what I love, because I believe the minute you tell your own story, it leaves you open to hearing other people's stories too, which means it helps you with a bigger picture. It helps you with a
Exactly.
much bigger picture.
And I prove it every day with my own poetry. Like I have coming up shows now and I like performances, slam poetry performances. And in most of them first of all my poetry is very personal, based on very personal stories, but I've tested the poetry that was right after this one that went viral when I wrote about this because of patriarchal system and way of thinking. This need for a male presence in the family, which unfortunately I had to go through myself. We are four sisters and we have one brother. So I wrote a poem about that of having to grow up with the question, how many kids are you in the family? I say four. And they're like, are you daughters or sons? And we're like, no, it's all daughters. Oh, may God bless you with a brother. And oh my God, I grew up hearing this, and I could only imagine what my parents had to go through to listen to this question all the time and to be pushed to have this man in the family. So I put them all of this trauma, and I called it patriarchal trauma. So I perform it, and then I have girls contacting me, or that are part of the audience that come forward later, and they're like, "We are also three sisters and one brother. We are also four sisters, and we are five and one brother." So they, I grew up hearing this all the time, and you're like, "Yeah, it is." First of all, it is not just me. It is so many of us going through that. And why is that happening? Because women are not supposed to get inheritance. You go from a door that is not yours, a house that is not yours, to another house that is not even again yours. So it's like, where is my house? What is happening? So just to put this, because a case like that, you cannot even report it to the police. Like when that poem was on social media already, one of the girls sent me a voice message on Instagram, and she was like, "Adelina, my dad is right now in hospital, and he will, I know, soon die from cancer. And right now, as he is in the hospital, I have family members and relatives telling me to get married, as I am the oldest daughter, and we are only daughters in the family. So it's going to be a household with only women. And they are telling me, while my dad is in the hospital, to get married. So we have a male representative. So we have a man in the house." And I'm like, "Oh my God, all I can do with you is go for a coffee and give you this space to talk, because how can you report such thing in the police?" It's like a way of thinking is another misconception of what we can do or what we cannot do as women, and this patriarchal way of seeing every step, every house. So I proved that when I put my personal story, first of all, nobody can tell me it is not like that, because I am just saying it's my personal story. I am not trying to relate to anybody. And then second, you see that you are not alone. You see that there is so much women. And then third, you see that they feel represented, which is the whole point of me doing poetry. So yeah, it was a proof, and I just kept doing it. I kept being super personal and vulnerable. Now everybody is up on my business. Everybody knows what I'm going through, but I'm fine with it as long as I can make a change or somehow bring it up for public discussion, I'm fine with it.
But I have to tell you that I recently went through an experience. I thought I didn't come from a patriarchal family. Okay. I came from a family where there was dialogue. I came from a family where my brother was the oldest and there were two daughters, but we all were treated in the same way, and education was for the three of us. My parents passed away, but my mother always leaned a bit on my brother because he was the oldest. He's 10 years older than me. And my father worked really long hours, so she inadvertently put him into a position of power without thinking. Okay, it wasn't. So they passed away, and recently one of my father's sisters passed away, and she had a very big weakness for me, but she loved all her nieces and nephews. She had no kids, and she left her will, and my brother decided he didn't like what the way the will was divided. And he decided that because he's the big brother, he's going to force me into a decision of change. I don't know what you want. And I thought to myself, where is this coming from? He would bully me and put terrible things online about me to the. And I thought to myself, where is this coming from? Why does he think him and my cousin thought that because they were the men of the family, they would make the decisions? My aunt had put me as co-executor. I was her favorite niece because I was the one that was in Cyprus. And was the one she always loved the most. We had a good relationship. I was always the one that she'd pick up the phone to if she needed something. And I thought to myself, where's this coming from, this patriarchy? And he actually stopped talking to me because I did not give in to his will. And I still don't know what he wanted me to do. I still don't know what he wanted me to do. But this idea that this man, the two men of the family, that happened to also be the two oldest cousins and two males, decided that they needed to take over the division of the will in contravention to what my aunt had written. My aunt died at the age of 90, and she was perfectly sane. Okay. It was only in the last 2 or 3 months that she started go I was noticing little things. I mean, at the age of 90, she forgot my son's birthday. I mean, 90. Okay, this is not it was only little things that I noticed. But And I was accused of manipulating the will and stuff like that. And I thought, you know what? I don't know how my mother did it, but she raised a patriarchal son. She had a son. She raised a son that thought because he's the big brother, he can actually deal with things. And so it was actually very, it was actually distressing. It's still distressing because he still is not talking to me. His family is not talking to me. And I think to myself, but what did I do? All I did was be the niece. All I did was be myself because I always, whether I was rich or poor here or in abroad, I always used to pick up the phone to my aunt. So she left me a little bit more. So she didn't have to leave any of us anything because she didn't have first degree relatives. She could have left it. And when she asked me about her will at some stage, she said, you know what, Thea, that's auntie. You leave it to your cat. You've got five cats outside. I don't care. It's your will, your money, do what you want. And she said to me, I'm not interested in your opinion. Take this piece of paper, take this pen. I know what I'm going to do. Just write it down for me so I actually could see it written down. But it was very distressing for me to realize that this home that I grew up in, believing it was democratic, and it was. But the minute my parents stepped out of the picture, this patriarch stepped in place, and I thought, okay, who is this person? So we do, whether, and I think molds need to be broken. You think things have changed, but you need physical, you need clashes, you need stories to come through to make you realize that, yes, it was a democratic household, but somehow my brother missed the memo about nothing. So I do, I mean, I do like the fact that, and I do think that when you talk and you say a lot of your slam poetry is done in dialect, I think it does need to be done in the language, the spoken language. Okay, so it mustn't be like in Cyprus, you don't want necessarily done in Greek. You want it done in the Cypriot dialect. So actually, so it's real conversations, it's real experiences.
Yeah,
That actually
exactly.
touches you because you know someone said that. It's not someone wrote that something in a newspaper or wrote a novel.
Exactly. Plus, I always have I try to always have a message in the end, and it's a message or a question raised for the people who would not understand it if I don't put it in slang, if I don't put it in the spoken way of spoken language, the way we use the language every day. So for me, it is important that they understand. Then, for however fancy we can make it or put the standard language to it, sure, if you want to fix it, you can go ahead. But for me, it's important that I send the message back to the people in my village that would judge me for, I don't know, anything, to be honest, at this point. So for me, it is important that they understand. That's why I was like, okay, that this is slam, and I understand that it is a way that it's not very much developed specifically in Albanian language. So I would have to work on even building a community that practices it as a way of expressing ourselves.
Tell me, your work has also been translated.
The work, sorry.
Has your work also been translated?
Yes, specifically that poem that went viral has been translated. I lost count in so many languages because even also when I was living with these students together, we had this idea of translating it in different languages. So it has been translated, obviously, in English, in German, French, even Arabic, Spanish, Italian, yeah. But also the rest of the poems, because of the different residencies that I took part of, for example, in Turkey or in Istanbul, in Sarajevo, I have also poetry that I have written while taking part of this on these residencies that have been immediately translated in these languages. In this case, in Turkish and in Bosnian and Serbian. So. Most of that it is translated, and I've also understood the power of translation because in slam for me it is important that the audience in front of me understands everything. And actually, when I was doing the residency in Sarajevo, the poem that I wrote, obviously I don't know Bosnian, so I wrote it in English, and I asked my friend because the whole idea, I'm gonna go through it, it also connects with the fact of being ethical on what you want to do as an artist. Because before going there, I had the idea of writing about immigrants, specifically women who had to leave Sarajevo or Bosnia in general, because of any given gender-based reasons. And then I go there, and the first story I hear is mind-blowing, where this woman is describing how her neighbor one day just entered, took over the house. I'm sorry for the language, but also raped their daughter. And then she had this story to tell me. And then I was like, there, oh my God, I cannot go around, find these women and ask them to please tell me your story because I want to write a poem about it. I felt like I would be so unethical, so
Of
not
course.
no zero empathy. Like, what would I do? So I decided to change the whole methodology. And I was like, look, I'm gonna be here 1 month. I'm gonna hang out with people. I'm gonna meet them randomly. Good for me was that I had already friends from Bosnia without being able to go there because we need a visa to go vice versa in these countries. It's
Anna.
crazy. So when I would hang out with them, their friends would be like, so what are you doing here? What is the plan? And I'm like, I have this project, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, my mom would love to talk to you about her story. Oh, my dad would love to. And I'm like, okay, then this is how I did it. And I wrote the poem, I wrote it in English, and I asked my friend to translate it in Bosnian. And I stayed before the event until 3 a.m. practicing it. I do have an ear for the language, but I don't speak it. And I was like, okay, you got this, you got this. I would put it on Google Translate, listen to how is the pronunciation. I got it, I got it. And then I go in front of them and I never sweat on stage. Like, I love being on stage. So, but in this moment, I could feel that I'm sweating. I'm like, am I saying the words correctly? I don't want to offend them. But it was a story. It was a poem about their experience, their history. So I cannot perform it in English and be there like a patronizer. Look what I'm telling you. Wow.
A
Oh my God.
colonial person.
Yeah.
What
Like, I'm sorry for what you went through, but I'm going to just. So I was like, okay, I'm going to perform it in this. And I felt, oh my God, like I am sweating so much. I perform it. I say it, na, na, na. And then I finish. Okay. Everybody's clapping. I go back to my friends and they're like, you lied to us. You knew the language all along. And I'm like, no, I don't. No, I don't. But I'm so happy that it sounded like I did. So that was the moment. Like every time I get this answer and these feedback from the audience, or when you see the comments on social media, they're like, how can she think of what is going to be my next thought after this phrase of hers? I'm like, oh my God, that is, first of all, the biggest compliment, but that also means that I am weaponizing very well my traumas because since growing up, I grew up in a big family. I had to think of what everyone thinks of me if I'm wearing this jacket or this dress or this. So everything I had to, and I was in their heads, I could think of what everyone could be thinking of me. So I was like, okay, if they have that impression. So this connection with the audience for me is super important. I want them to understand what I'm saying. I don't want to leave them wondering. And that's how I understood that. It is a different way of slam poetry, and for me, audience is very important.
Okay, I mean, I agree with you. You couldn't say it in any language except Bosnian, because then you would have appeared arrogant, or
Exactly.
one of the colonial powers coming in to tell me what I think. Because we're coming to the end of this conversation, is there any story you want to tell us? Any experience you feel that changed your life, whether positive or negative, or a person you met?
Oh, maybe you mean end of the year kind of wish. I don't know about a specific story, to be honest with you. I just realized that I have grown so much throughout these years, and I am happy to have said yes, even to some opportunities that I thought are going to be better, but they turned out maybe not so good. But for me, I have this way of living and this way of seeing everything that I do as a lesson learned. I know sometimes it sounds like pathetic to be said, but I really do live based on that. Every even mistake that I might have done throughout my life is. Okay, this is a lesson learned. I should not do it again like that, or I should keep doing it like I did it before. And sometimes I just feel not. I mean, I think I don't give enough credit to the presence of my mom in my life for who I've become. I tried to write just lately a poem about her, and it felt like I'm writing rubbish. It just felt like, because when I write about shitty man, I'm so fluent in it. I had the experience of like, unfortunately, meeting them for good and for bad because they helped me for my poetry. So again, everything is lesson learned. But when I write about her, I'm like, oh my God, I don't even have the right words. Like, what am I doing? And I remember specifically when this group of young people, actually it was a director from with his team from her team, sorry, from Switzerland came to do this documentary about my life as an activist here in Kosovo and in the region. And I met my mom, and I went to my mom and I was talking to her about this, and she was like, yeah, that's amazing. I told you, just don't be like me. And I'm like, Mom, do you get it that I want to be exactly like you? Like the fact that you could overcome all of this patriarchal way that you had to live throughout from, and you just became stronger. Like she's not talkative like me. No, she kills you with silence. And I'm like, you don't even know. You don't even know what you've done in the moments you chose not to speak, in the moments you just gave me a side eye, in the moments when you, like, I just feel like I don't give her enough credit. And as years are passing by, I feel like I should keep mentioning her more because for us, this is a podcast. We can have it again and again. And for her, if I tell her I did this, she would be super happy. So sometimes I just want to acknowledge her and specifically also my grandmother, who she didn't know. She is, luckily she's still with us, a good example. And I remember because she grew up in the time when women in Kosovo would wear these very long dresses, but like they are somehow tucked in your belly that you cannot move very freely. And she told me, oh my God, if I didn't have to wear this kulia, they are called, I would be the best football player if the ball didn't get lost in them. And I was like, my God, how many unlived dreams I have with this woman. I mean, these women around me have, and I have the chance to actually go beyond this and be the first woman that takes a plane alone, the first one who's going to be screaming in the middle of the square about her rights, the first one who goes on TV, the first one who gets a university degree. I owe them. I should do even more. So this is a realization, maybe not a story, but just to acknowledge people who have paved the way for us, specifically women.
But I agree with you. I'm really touched to hear that because I think a lot of the time, and it distresses me when I hear it around us, is that a lot of the time we don't acknowledge the fact that we're not the first that are doing what we're doing. Someone came
Nope.
before us and before
Exactly.
them and before that. And if that change didn't occur, we wouldn't be where we are. And no matter
No.
how big or small their contribution, whether it's the silence of your mother or the football play of your grandmother, something they did in some way influenced what you're doing today. So I agree with you. We need to remember that our moms, for better or for worse, incredible role models. And I
Yeah.
also, I mean, the person I would also like to acknowledge is my aunt, who, when I got a divorce and I came to Cyprus, she was unmarried. She was my aunt. She wasn't my mother. And she opened her space to me, for me and my son. She also opened the space to my ex-husband if he wanted to come and visit his son, because she said to me, "You've sorted out your life with your ex-husband. We need to heal the wounds of your son. So as long as and whenever he wants to come and visit his son, he can come and stay with me." And I know that I would have made it without her, but the fact that she was there to hold space for me and my son does not have a price. And I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't have her, knowing that my son was safe if I was late or I needed to do something. So to me, we need to remember the people that came before us, the woman, and it's usually a lot of them is the woman came before us and held space to ensure that we would be the best we could be. I think that's a
Yes.
lovely note to end this conversation on. that we both have done a lot in our lives. You still have more to do because you're much younger, but we owe it all to the woman that came before us.
Yes. Thank you so much.
So
Thank you.
thank you, Adelina. Thank you for having this wonderful conversation with me. I look forward to seeing you maybe soon. Listeners, thank you for listening. Anything you want to say, Adelina?
To the
Just
listeners, I hope I wasn't super loud, but I talk with so much passion. So here goes my voice of an activist, of a feminist activist being used. And I hope they enjoy this conversation. I was very vulnerable. I have never maybe gone this deep into specifically my family side. So thank you for the space, Magda, and thank you for this opportunity.
And we also need to remember that we have each other's back. It's not the woman
Yes.
behind us, but it's also the woman at the side of us. Okay, so thank you, everyone, and stay safe to all of us.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.